This is a Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show on WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. And this is Dick Paddock, and sitting across from me is our co-host, Lorraine Hoyt, and she will be introducing our guest today, Nadine. And go ahead.
Hey, Dick. We're on community-supported radio. I love that expression, community-supported radio.
We need you to support it.
Yes, but we're really happy to be here and privileged to be here. It's a wonderful thing. It took a long time for people to get this going, and it's great. As Dick said, we have a guest today, Nadine Beer, and she is with the Student Action with Farm Workers. Nadine, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're delighted. Nadine's got some other interesting organizations she belongs to, but we'll start off with the Student Action for Farm Workers, because I know that Wolf has been real involved with that, particularly one of our members, Miriam. And I'm just going to make this announcement now because we may forget later. There's going to be this Saturday, September 20th, there's going to be a caravan going out to some of the farm worker camps. These are kind of hidden away on little rural roads. Nobody quite knows they're there. But so that you can see for yourself what conditions the farm workers are living in and how they are treated. So the people who want to come, you can call Miriam Thompson at 919-370-4114. We'll hopefully remember to announce that again before the end of the show, 919-370-4114. If you would like to come, they're going to meet around 10:30 at the Friends Meeting House on Raleigh Road, and you won't be getting back till around 5 or 5:30. I think the camps that they're going to are around Dudley, which is about an hour or an hour and a half from here. So part of that time will be in getting to where they are. So just want to be sure you know about that. And now we're going to talk to Nadine, and she can tell us about her work in trying to support farm workers have more just conditions.
Sure. So my name is Nadine Burr, and I work at Student Action with Farm Workers, and I am the advocacy and organizing director there. And Student Action with Farm Workers has been around for 22 years.
Wow.
Now. And we started out as these courses at Duke that were led by students to go out and find out what was happening with migrant workers in North Carolina. And then the idea was that by documenting the lives of farm workers, that they could share it with community members at large, and that things would change if they saw, oh, okay, farm workers, or migrant workers, seasonal workers are having these really hard conditions. Let's let everyone know about it. Let's let the public know about it, and they will work to change and make a difference, which was great that they, as young people, as young students, privileged students, that they took those efforts to try to change things. We became a nonprofit in 1992, and started off with this one flagship program, which is the Into the Fields internship program. And that was, again, working with students and training them to have them work at individual organizations in education, in health, in organizing, in legal human rights work, to just give farm workers vital information so that they could improve their own conditions and get basic vital information about things that they needed, registering kids in schools, registering farm workers at rural health clinics so they could get access to that, just basic needs, really.
Mm-hmm.
And today we have several programs. You know, we still have the Into the Fields internship program. We have a program called Sowing Seeds for Change, which is a 6-month-long health fellowship. We coordinate National Farm Worker Awareness Week, which people all over the United States participate in, again, raising awareness about farm worker issues asking people to take actions. We have a new program called Solidaridad, which in English means solidarity, which are students that work at the staff office to help support our work and to grow them professionally mm-hmm. so that they can work at organizations like SAF in the future. We want students to, you know, not go into corporate America, but work in social justice, work in farm worker justice. So trying to expose them to that. And then we also have a very special program, which is, I think, close to everyone's heart at our organization, which is our Levante Leadership Institute, which is a migrant youth group. So kids whose parents work in farm work and they themselves have worked in farm work, to help them graduate high school, go to college, and develop as leaders. So.
Oh, wow. Because that's what I was thinking when you were talking about developing the students in leadership, which is great. But I thought, gee, is there any program developing leadership with the farm workers?
Yeah. So our migrant youth group is like one of the main ways that we do that. In our internship program, half of the students are from farm worker families.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We also, you know, we participate in a couple of coalitions, too. We help start the Farm Worker Advocacy Network.
Uh-huh.
And so one component of that network, it's really working on improving legislation for farm workers.
Mm-hmm.
But one way is we need to have conversations with workers so they can tell us what is
mm-hmm.
happening,
mm-hmm.
you know, what are their priorities?
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, what translates as everyday life, you know, working, housing conditions, those are all translatable to legislation and how laws need to be better for farm workers and how laws need to be enforced for farm workers.
Mm-hmm.
We're also part of another coalition called the Adelante Education Coalition, which is working to improve education for Latinos, young people K through 12, farm mm-hmm. workers K through 12, so they can have equal access at that level,
mm-hmm.
which we assume is happening, but it's not always happening. You know, sometimes Latino parents might not have all the same information, not be able to go to the school.
Yes.
So working on that stuff and also fighting for in-state tuition. We have people who are directly affected by the issues also involved in that work.
So it sounds like that your organization is involved in a broad array of services and programs, which is really, so I guess over these 22 years you've grown and developed and broadened. And
yeah.
Well, what now, did you get involved as a student? Tell us about yourself. How did you get where you are?
And almost everyone who works at our organization did our internship program.
Uh-huh.
So we really, when we talk about leadership development, it's like we went through it ourselves.
Okay.
Almost everyone who works there. Actually, maybe everyone who works there right now except for one person. So when I was 21 years old at the College of Charleston in South Carolina, I saw a flyer about an internship program, and I was like, oh, wow, you get to speak Spanish at this internship program.
Did you already speak Spanish?
Yeah, I had studied Spanish for many years mm-hmm. and, you know, was really into Spanish and, like, I want to speak Spanish where I work. And you would get paid to do that internship program, and you would help people in that internship program. And one of my friends was like, let's go to this workshop about this internship program. So this is in, like, 2001.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, I think the thing that put me over the edge was my friend was like, let's go find out about this. So we go, and I swear that was really the first time I'd ever heard about farm workers.
Really? Now,
yes.
This was in Charleston.
This is in Charleston, South Carolina. Farm workers are down the street. I mean, they're down the street almost everywhere you live, really.
Yes.
Or like, you know, a couple miles away, 20 miles, 30 miles away. And I was so shocked. I was like, wow, they never taught me that. Like, we never talked about food or where food comes from or who even picks the food or what are the conditions, you know?
Yeah. Well, now, what year was this?
2001.
2001.
But every day I go into classrooms talking to students. I went to a retirement community, actually, and people are still shocked. It's because we don't really talk about it still. Yeah. We don't talk about, you know, there are people who are men, women, children picking our food. We don't talk about, you know, and then once you get that conversation going, you can just ask people, what do you think it would be like to pick, you know, sweet potatoes? And then people can put the pieces together. Well, you know, it's hot outside and, mm-hmm. oh, I know that there are pesticides that they spray on food. Mm-hmm. They come at it at that level because they think about the food that they're actually eating.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times they'll know about pesticides and then they don't really know, you know, what farm workers are paid or how low those wages are. They don't know that people are still following the crops. And what that means for children in school, mm-hmm. or what their housing might be like. So,
you know, what's really interesting when you're saying that is that there is such an emphasis now on chefs and cooking and food, and people are called like foodies and what's the latest this or that. And part of that's really good. I mean, it's about, you know, eating locally and knowing where you more talk about where does your food come from. But not too many of those programs go into the other aspect of it. Oh, I want to know it's grown and it's organic or not or whatever. But what about the people who are picking it? You know, mm-hmm. it's all about the chefs and the preparing and how delicious it is. Or right. So that's really interesting. If we could just get word to all these chefs and they have these shows, you know, to put a word in about the ones who are picking this arugula, mm-hmm. or whatever the latest hot item, or, you know. There's a radio program on PBS, what's her name, the Silver Table, or Lynn Rosetta Casper or something. And on some of her programs, she does go into that. Mm-hmm. But not every program, but I have heard of, you know, more than once. But that's unusual. That's unusual. So you go. So you go in like to schools. And, now, what about in the schools? I know that some of the schools are having gardens at school and trying to talk mm-hmm. to kids about, you know, eating healthily. But I wonder if any even take that other step about caring about the workers who are picking the food for them.
I think so. We mostly talked with college students, university mm-hmm. level students, but mm-hmm. I know that there are some like radical youth groups that are happening that as part of their curriculums, they're learning about like sustainability. Mm-hmm. They're learning about organic and local and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And they're also, you know, they're learning about issues that affect them, like food insecurity mm-hmm. and what that means. And so that is very, you can connect that to farm worker issues mm-hmm. too, as mm-hmm. farm workers are facing food insecurity.
Yeah.
You know, the people who are picking our food don't have access to the same food. You know, they pick sweet potatoes and get paid 60 cents a bucket. And then you go to the grocery store and it's $2 a pound, maybe. So it's mm-hmm. like there's a lot. They see the inequity even when they buy the groceries. Mm-hmm. And we see it too. So mm-hmm. I think there are some programs at, for example, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. They have a couple of food-based groups. One is called Alianza, which is the farm worker solidarity group. And it's what happens with student groups, college students groups, is they take a lot of effort to keep them going and mm-hmm. rebuilding them. So I think that one is kind of under construction. Mm-hmm. But there's also one that's very active, and it's called Fair Local and Organic. And they care about, like, all of their caring about all the issues. So around farm workers.
Where was that at?
UNC Chapel Hill, a student group.
Oh, okay. So that's not, they're not growing them, but they're learning about what's fair, local, and
organic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they do a lot of activities around food mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. farming, and and they have great support, and they seem to be very organized. So those are a couple examples. And then I know I want to give a shout out to a group called Seeds in Durham.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they have a youth group that is working on all of these issues too. And I know there's a group in Goldsboro, and I think they're called Swarm. Again, they care about migrant worker issues as well as food insecurity issues, nutrition issues.
Yeah.
So people are adding it in. And I do want to share something about, you talked about chefs and how that's a hot topic right now. We kicked off a campaign in 2010 and called the Harvest of Dignity.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And I don't know if people were able, we also created a documentary for that film to talk about how things haven't changed in 50 years since Harvest of Shame.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, so yes. Harvest of Shame, Edward R. Murrow,
yes.
Huge impact on the United States.
Yes.
It came on at a time when there was maybe like two TV stations.
Yeah.
And it came on around.
So it was CBS Reports or something.
Yes.
Like
right.
that. And that's when probably three-fourths of the nation would be watching it.
Exactly. Around yeah. Thanksgiving, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So after that film, they were able to get some federal funding for farm worker issues. They got federal funding for a migrant education program, and they got federal funding for migrant health clinics, too. So, again, so in 2010, we made this documentary called Harvest of Dignity. We got UNC... the TV station,
yes.
The local TV station,
yes.
To show
UNC
it.
TV,
UNC
yes,
TV
I
to
did
show
see it.
It,
yeah.
And we had this amazing kickoff event that featured farm workers speaking at the event about the campaign, about their own lives, what they've experienced. We had several film screenings, and also at that kickoff event, we had I think her name's Andrea Rusing,
yes,
from Lantern. And she talked about farm worker issues and talked about
good for her.
Yeah. And it was really good. And I think it really helped our campaign kind of, you know, we're trying to connect to this movement, this foodie movement
mm-hmm,
too, because
mm-hmm.
we see it's got all this attention. It's got mm-hmm. this excitement. So how do we get people excited about farm worker issues?
Yeah. And connect them. Mm-hmm. This delicious food comes from somebody's bent over stoop labor. When I was 11, it was during the Second World War. I'm dating myself, and that's okay. That there was a shortage of farm help because a lot of the people are fighting the war, mm-hmm. so they use whatever they can get. Some German prisoners of war worked in farms, and we were kids, and we worked there. You know, we had a chance to work there at 11, which was pretty cool. Of course, I was so slow; it took me a month to make $25, I think, because for each bushel of beans that you picked, you got a coupon that was worth 25 cents. And that made me appreciate what stoop labor is like, that in the hot sun, that is so hard. And even as a young, flexible person on your back, you know, you start off in the morning and it's, you know, the ground is soft. But then so sometimes your back hurts, you go on your knees. And then by the middle of the day, the sun hardens it, so your knees can't take it. You got to bend over. I had an early lesson, but everybody should go and do that and see what it feels like. And I can only imagine hoisting a basket of sweet potatoes.
Right. It's a 30-pound bucket.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have, like, all this information, these fact sheets.
Yeah.
Talking to workers. For a 30-pound bucket, you get paid about 60 cents, 65 cents. It depends on where you're working.
So the price hasn't gone up too much when I got my quarter, huh?
It hasn't. No, it really, really hasn't.
And that was in...
That's the point, yes.
Yeah, that was around 1945 or something. Oh, my gosh.
So to make $50 to pick sweet potatoes, and I think tomatoes is similar, too, you have to pick 2 tons.
Oh, wow.
Of potatoes. Yeah. And it is going back and forth because you have to pick it. Run to the truck.
Yes.
They still give you the coupon or the little ticket, which you turn in later. And it's called piece rate. And so that is one of the ways that workers are stuck in poverty.
Yeah.
Because the quickness of your working means how much you'll get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And also that's because of those poverty wages, that's why we see children working a lot, too, in the fields.
Oh.
Because families need, basically everyone needs to pitch in to be able to make money. So it's really difficult on children. We have a lot of farm worker students that drop out of high school to work to
mm-hmm.
help their families.
Mm-hmm.
One of the campaigns that we're working on is to get, right now, legally, you can be as young as 12 and work in the fields in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We want to increase that minimum age from 12 to at least 14.
Mm-hmm.
And we've introduced a bill to do that a couple of times and have not gotten anywhere really with those bills. We've gotten bill sponsors, we've introduced bills, but we haven't won those campaigns. And you would think, hey, children should not be working at 12 years old.
Yeah.
Besides dangerous equipment, in the pesticides, in the heat, in this backbreaking labor that makes them physically tired. But yeah, you can be as young as 12 and work up to 30 hours a week.
Oh my gosh. Up to 30 hours, even when school is on?
And you can be younger than 12 with your parents' permission.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, for us, that was a lark, you know.
Like, let's go do this.
Yeah, and again, one of those friends, oh, let's go do this, and you make some money, you know.
Yeah.
But I would hate to have to do that. And I did it because my mother did not want me to. But I did it because my friends were.
Yeah.
And as I say, we were pokey and we quit early. And, you know, so it was a lark to do for about a month. But when you're trying to keep the food in the family, you know, your family needs your help. That's a whole different pressure.
Right. And the thing is, we don't want, you know, people sometimes accuse us of saying that, what do you want? Like, people not to work in the farm work at all? And that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Some people like to work outside. Mm-hmm. They like to use their body when they work. Mm-hmm. We just want the conditions to be better.
That's right. You know, one of the things with farm work, in the 30s, what was with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when they were getting these wonderful programs like Social Security and other programs, because of pressure, as I understand it, from the South, because so many blacks were working in farms or as housemaids, and both of those jobs were excluded from these federal programs as the rest of us depend on.
That's right.
So they can't get Social Security, mm-hmm. and I don't think domestic workers can either.
So domestic workers and farm workers are the two groups of workers that were excluded from kind of this big series of labor laws that the unions helped to get.
Yes.
So they were excluded from overtime pay, excluded from minimum wage. Oftentimes, I know I'm not sure about domestic workers, but for farm work, they're excluded for workers' comp. All depending on the number of worker, like small farm versus large farm, and child labor, and also unions. So they're allowed to join unions, but they can be fired for organizing.
Mm-hmm.
So as you said, you know, at that time period, and this is something that I always bring up, you know, these two groups of workers are excluded. Why would farm workers be excluded from those laws? Why would domestic workers be excluded from those laws? Because at that time, who were those workers? African-American workers, black workers. And so that was the way that the Southern Democrats agreed to pass that legislation.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
We call that institutional racism.
You nailed it right on the head.
Yeah.
Institutional racism, white privilege, and we just... You know, but that was back then, and now we've had the Civil Rights Bill, but they still can't change to include farm workers and domestic workers in some of the support programs that the rest of us really, you know, fight for and treasure.
Even more we depend on it.
And I definitely know I depend on
right. And there's just such a huge, at least in farm work, there's just a huge lobby of farm businesses, agribusiness, that keeps it this way. And we can see, you know, who are the farm workers today. They're still people of color. And they're even saying that they call undocumented workers illegal workers. And they say that they shouldn't even be here. So why should we improve these conditions for them? Like, why should we change these laws? And we say, we all eat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's why it matters.
Yeah, and I'm sure all the farmers do everything they can to have these workers be here. Because what are they going to do? I remember there was one state with all this stuff about immigration, maybe not that long ago, a year or two ago, and they got really strict about deporting people, and some of the farmers were saying their food was rotting in the field mm-hmm. because they had no workers to pick it. So these workers are desperately needed. If we want to eat, somebody's got to pick it. Mm-hmm. And so that we can eat without feeling there's blood on our hands or blood in our food, all of us should be supporting justice in terms of fair wages and protection, particularly with pesticides. I was thinking of the tobacco industry. That's particularly really, really hard mm-hmm. on people with all the amount of pesticides they use in that. And just even tobacco by itself, it has this sticky stuff.
The nicotine.
Yeah, again, get nicotine poisoning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's pretty pernicious when it happens to children.
And I was just going to say, and so what kind of a country are we that we can say that children can be picking tobacco? And you might think, oh, let them pick blueberries. That might not be so bad. But tobacco particularly would be one of the
most dangerous
yeah. for your health and well-being mm-hmm. crops. Yeah. So you've been working with the Student Action for Farm Workers for how long now?
I've been working there for 5 years. In October, I'll have my 5-year anniversary. But I was an intern in 2002.
So you've been supporting
the work for a long
time. Yeah, for a long time. Dick is giving us the signal. It's time to take a station break. Okay, Dick?
Yes, this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the wake-up call. Something else we need to be awakened to is the plight of our farm workers. And so that's what we're doing today with our guest, Nadine Beer. And we'll be back to her in a moment. In the meantime, we're going to tell you that this is WCOM-LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on your radio dial, an all-volunteer
FM,
station.
103.5 FM.
On your FM dial.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an all-volunteer radio station, and it's an all-volunteer Women's International League. Somebody complained about that being such a long name. Originally, it was only Women's International League. They left out. They added the Peace and Freedom later.
I could kind of go for that, but then it would be, what is the league for?
Yeah.
Mm. You know? But the short, our shortcut for any listeners who haven't picked up on this or are new is WILPF. The first letter is WYLPF, but. Unless you know what WILPF is, I know my kids, when I'd be talking about WILPF this and WILPF that, they were thinking I was saying woof. So, it's a lengthy name, but it's a great organization.
Right. And, we have had discussions about exactly how great an organization it is lately, and we need to figure out how to take that information and get more people into it. But that's separate discussion.
Yeah.
WILPF has a local website, triangle.wilpf.org. And the radio station also, of course, has a website, which is wcomfm.org. And you can go to that website and stream onto our program when it's our turn, or any whatever programs on the air, we streamed live onto your computer. We are brought to you by Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street for a little while. Pretty soon they're going to be moving over within my purview here in Carrboro on Lloyd Street.
I think they're going to have a big shindig at the end of the month. We'll try to find out, and we'll let you know about it.
Yeah, we'll let you know about it. And they have a website, which I'm sure will tell you all about the impending move, and that is internationalistbooks.org.
And we're very happy to be associated with them and associated with this radio station. When you think about it, all three, we're all volunteer-run, it's our gift back to the community, a gift of love from all three organizations. And And we're really proud to be associated with all.
Yeah. I had a question for our guest.
Okay.
Was there something else you were supposed to know? Oh, we remind you about Saturday.
Yes, we're talking about farm workers, and this is one of these actions in support of farm workers, what Nadine's been talking about, so people get to understand how hard they work, why we are trying to advocate for them, because they are not paid fairly. They are not given enough safety in terms of pesticide exposure. And so this Saturday, a whole group of people are going to caravan to Dudley to some camps there. So you can meet with some farm workers. You can talk to them, get their stories, see the conditions in which they live in the camps. And then you can tell friends about it, because as Nadine's been telling us, even today, so many people do not know, even though there's a lot of talk about food, but not enough talk about who's picking the food and what conditions they're working under.
And we'll be going down with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, FLOC.
Mm-hmm. FLOC.
And one of the things that FLOC is trying to do is to organize the laborers to be able to work on their own behalf, and be able to organize and be able to
negotiate
with the farmers. And one of the things that happens is that if you go down, if somebody goes down into the fields where the workers stay, and try to organize them, they can get themselves into trouble, because they can,
it's private land.
Careful, it's private land, and mm-hmm. you have to be aware of the laws, and it can be really difficult on any of the workers who
talk to
the organizers. And I'm sure that I'd like to get more about that from Nadine, because
let me just finish though about Saturday. I just want to give that phone number. Miriam Thompson, one of our Wolf sisters, is helping organize this along with some others. And so if you would like to come, and we hope a lot of people would like to come, her number, Miriam Thompson, her number 919-370-4114. And it's going to be 10:30 this Saturday at the Friends Meeting House, which is on Raleigh Road, just down from the bell tower. And won't be getting back till around 5 or 5:30, because it's a little bit of a drive to Dudley. But it will be interesting. You'll be with congenial people. You'll learn a lot. And I did that a few years ago, and it's such an important part for all of us of our education to know what the conditions are for our farmers.
Yeah. So just a couple of things. Farm Labor Organizing Committee is very important to North Carolina and very important to the United States, I think. They won a historical contract with the North Carolina Growers Association because of the Mount Olive. Do you guys remember the Mount Olive pickle boycott?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
We marched. I stood out there.
We were there.
Yeah.
Joanne Price was helped started, and I was living in Durham at the time, and I was lucky enough to be at the first organizing meeting.
Awesome.
At Joanne's house. Yeah.
That is so cool.
A little history there.
So FLOC is, they're helping workers to organize themselves so that they can negotiate with their employers. Mm-hmm. We know, when you look at the whole structure of agriculture, there is one group of people who are making the majority of the money. That's not the farm workers. It is not the farmers. It is the actual corporations that are buying the product. Mm-hmm. They set the price. They set the conditions. And it puts a lot of pressure down. So it puts the pressure on the farmers, who then puts the pressure on the workers.
You might go back. Excuse me, go back to the pickle thing, because he would say, it's the farmers, between them and the workers, we just pickle
they
the
blame. Pickle. Yeah.
So tell us how that went.
I mean, I think they will. I mean, just trying to get your way out of something, you got to blame someone else, yeah. I think. So they would blame the growers.
I'm not responsible.
Right. Exactly. And that happens with all kinds of corporate campaigns. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's happening with the R.J. Reynolds campaign,
yes.
too.
It's still pertinent today.
So, I mean, I'm sure Mount Olive Pickles makes a lot of money. But today, we know the tobacco companies, they don't make, you know, thousands. I don't think they even make millions. They make billions off of farm workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions are terrible. Mm. I mean, just kind of like
some
you guys
of the worst
conditions. The kids talked about this. I was just with our youth group this weekend, and they were talking about, you know, feeling dizzy, having to vomit, not having places to use the bathroom. Just tons of, from the heat, from the nicotine, from pesticides, and just on their growing bodies, again, very difficult. So Flock is working, and I know that they're going to win to pressure R.J. Reynolds to, I think, to pay the growers more and get the growers to pay the workers more.
Well,
for the
and Oxfam
Oxfam America.
And then a lot of it is in Britain, right? The
British Tobacco.
And so they have been under pressure. And they're, I think, if I understand this, putting some pressure on the American.
Yeah, Flock's done a great job of kind of mapping out the campaign and mapping out these pressure points to put pressure on R.J. Reynolds. So, also with Pantry, they do monthly kind of rallies outside of pantries, because Pantry is one of the big buyers of the products and sellers, and they benefit off of that
kangaroo.
So boy, oh boy, so you can see how many layers and how hard it is to get your tactics with these layers of and nobody wanting to take responsibility.
Exactly. And I think, you know, you were just talking about one of these aspects about camp access, which is, you know, we've always had that as one of our legislative targets, but even more so now. There was, you know, this kind of, I guess it's a law now that came through the legislature this short session. It was called the Farm Act, and one of the pieces in it, it seemed very, you know, it didn't seem like 100% negative. We had lobbyists working for us. They pulled this for us. And I looked at it, and it said that it would be a felony if you were caught trespassing on an agricultural operation. So what that was really about were kind of the animal activists videotaping.
Right.
But when we saw that, when I saw that, I thought, hey, this might affect outreach workers. This might affect the health outreach workers. This might affect union organizers. So this is not good. So we got to go and talk to legislators and kind of tell them like how this might affect us. So there was some, I would say, a little bit of misinformation, because one of our main contacts at the legislature thought that there was some kind of statute that allowed us to do outreach to workers. And we don't have anything very strong on that. So what we go by are tenants' rights. You know, if you're renting an apartment and someone owns it, they can't tell you who can and come visit.
Mm-hmm.
You have a right to visitors. So we were looking at that, and also just thinking about like human rights issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not allowing people to get visitors, they are so much more vulnerable.
And they're almost like they're prisoners.
Exactly. And they're isolated. And we see these no trespassing signs, and we see these fences around camps.
Mm-hmm.
And the fences, are they there to keep people out, or are they there to keep people in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these kind of things. And just this kind of, I think the word is paternalistic mentality, mm-hmm. about these are my workers.
Mm-hmm.
This is my property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like my children. That they're just afraid of people coming and giving them information.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that kind of, obviously, there's more tension with union organizers coming, and it's probably easier for health outreach workers to come. But even with us, we have a theater group, which our interns do, and they use theater of the oppressed, Teatro Campesino to teach workers about their rights or to teach on health issues, to entertain the workers. They do. It's very participatory for workers to, like, join in, and we sing songs and have dancing, all kinds of things. And one year when we went out there to do our theater program, my coworker was yelled at so much by the grower's wife and by the grower. And they threatened to call the police. And I know that one of the organizers with Flock was arrested recently. I don't know if they set him free right after, but I think they put him in handcuffs when he was doing outreach too.
Wow. So that depending on the particular farmer's mood of the day, you take a certain risk, and it sounds like, if I understand you, the laws are very unclear and ambivalent.
Yeah, I think it can be up to interpretation. We have like a letter from the Attorney General that kind of says that we're allowed to do outreach, but we need something stronger on the books about that. That farm workers have the right to have visitors.
Yeah.
If they don't want the visitors, they should be able to say no also.
Yeah. So when you say the attorney, the North Carolina attorney, mm-hmm. you're talking about North Carolina.
Yes.
So your work is primarily in North Carolina.
It is in North Carolina. We also have some national work, but this particular issue is even going to the United Nations. There's, yeah,
great.
There's like a group of lawyers and advocates who kind of created a report, and they're issuing it to a human rights committee in the United Nations. So it's just like this, if, you know, again, it's talking about the vulnerability of workers if they can't have visitors. You know, everyone's talking about human trafficking. Well, this is a set of workers that are very vulnerable,
yes,
to those issues. And if, you know, and that's a huge issue internationally. It's getting more momentum here in the States.
Well, speaking about international, how does Canada, that's our neighboring country, do they treat the workers any better? They don't. I'm disappointed because they do some things better than us, although they have a pretty conservative, that's Stephen Harper, for the last too many years. But still.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of us are under the impression that Canada does better by farm workers. But they also have guest worker programs that don't allow workers to bring their families, that, again, have workers isolated. There was recently some issues around transporting too many workers, getting in a car accident, people dying. There are organizations in Canada that are working to help farm workers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is called, it's in Spanish, I think it's like Migrant Justice or something like
mm-hmm.
this. And a lot of colleges also that get involved with
mm-hmm.
these issues.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a program that existed that would go out to the different farms. And this one has existed for like 100 years. Go out to farms to teach workers how to read and write.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if workers, you know, have more of these kind of skills, they can advocate better for themselves too, and
mm-hmm.
I feel like have more confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think Canada is pretty similar to the United States when it comes to these
issues. What about you? Are there any countries that, I was just wondering if there was some model,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Scandinavian countries, are there some countries where they have developed laws or programs that, because what made me think of that is about going to the UN, you know, and it made me wonder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's other countries that are worse than us, even though
right.
it's hard to imagine. But
I think what we could do is we can kind of envision what good worker rights are.
Yeah, we don't need a model.
If we just get, we know that it's hard on workers right now, too. Like, that's why there's fast food workers striking to get $15
mm-hmm.
an hour. That's why there's the teacher union is kind of
struggling
right now against these policies that are kind of trying to pull everyone back and push everyone back.
So all labor is under threat right now.
I think so.
With
we
globalization,
have to remember that.
The race to the bottom,
mm-hmm.
with the increased use of robots, putting, you know, I was even reading something about putting lawyers out of work, that they're, that they would have these computers that could go through these briefs, you know, all this. I know. With doctors, there's a lot of automation of different kinds going on that a lot of people think this is just low-paid workers that are under threat. But it's all labor is under threat right now.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, you know, I have a Google alert on farm workers, which is like Google will send you every article that mentions farm workers. Mm-hmm. And occasionally there'll be an article about robots, trying to get robots to do farm work. And we know that just it doesn't happen. Like a robot's not going to be able to say, this is ripe, this isn't ripe. You know, mm-hmm. it just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to displace workers. We want workers to be able to work in the fields, but we need to make sure they get breaks, make sure they have bathrooms, make sure they have access to clean water.
To clean water.
Bathrooms, you know, shade, even shade.
Break time.
Break time. And a fair wage. I mean,
a fair wage, absolutely. Yeah. And a right to organize so that they can themselves talk amongst themselves as workers to say what they need, you know.
Yes. Well, in the time we have left, I know that there's two other organizations that you're involved with, and I'm going to just tell a little bit about, I think, Witness for Peace, you're mm-hmm. on the board, and then Jews for Justice. Mm-hmm. We can stay with Farmworks. God knows we could go on for the whole program, but I just thought maybe you might want to mention a little bit about your other justice work. What a busy person you are,
So I was first able to go on a Witness for Peace delegation and actually help organize it. I guess it was really just last year. Is that right? Or 2 years ago? Last year. I'm getting old, too. I can't remember. So, you know, as you guys know, like, the reason that farmworker issues are so... People are always like, why are immigrants coming here? Immigrants shouldn't come to the United States. We know it's kind of, you were mentioning it, our economic policies have an effect on other countries.
Yes.
And that one of the effects was to bring basically workers, farmers in Mexico were driven out of their jobs.
NAFTA, folks.
Right.
NAFTA, that was going to be such a wonderful thing for Mexico and us and Canada, and it just destroyed the corn. Mm-hmm. Work corn harvest for farmers in Mexico. Thousands. A friend had brought back a paper just during one period of time, 250,000 farm workers in Mexico.
Exactly.
Because we dumped a lot of cheap corn and they couldn't compete.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly like what's on our
side. So then we say, well, then what do those thousands of farm workers do? Then we wonder, you got to make a connection. Then we have a lot of people desperately coming here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people aren't just like, oh, my country, I'm having a hard time. They are poor. Like, they are not able to make their livelihood like they could before.
I'm starving.
Yeah. So Witness for Peace kind of does that work to make those connections to mm-hmm. NAFTA. They look at the drug war. What does that mean? What is happening? Well, you know, who wants the drugs? People in the United States. So that's what is what's
countries
happening.
And
then how do we deal with the drug war by militarizing other countries? That doesn't work either, you know, because then there's all kinds of issues that come up with that, including gangs.
Yes.
And so just trying to make those connections and improve the issues. So one of the things, a big thing that Witness for Peace does is they do these delegations so people can see for themselves, mm-hmm. hear from, you know, communities what's happening and what kind of support that they need. And so right now Witness for Peace does work in Mexico, Cuba, Colombia, Nicaragua, and I want to say Honduras, but I'm not sure
either,
if that's
but
right.
I went on one in 2004 to Colombia,
mm-hmm.
and they just do a wonderful your time is filled, but it's so meaningful. They have people, staff who are there who make all these connections. So when you go, you have a welcome at that with all these groups, labor groups, women's groups, church groups. We even met with the military. I mean, we just met the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
We met with wonderful farmers, a whole gamut of Colombian society. Mm-hmm. And you went to Mexico?
I had to go to Mexico, so we were looking at NAFTA, and we were also looking at some stuff around farming and farm worker issues, and actually got to have conversations with returned migrant person to, you know, hear about what it's like to come back and mm-hmm. being deported and things like that. So because every day I work on farm worker issues, and then we try to make laws to improve conditions, and we don't get very much traction. And so my big thing, I feel like one of the things I'm passionate about is, hey, let's not forget about NAFTA. How can we stop NAFTA, and how can we stop the TPP?
Yes.
Which is, everyone says NAFTA on steroids. We need to stop that from expanding, because North Carolina workers don't win either. I mean, we saw that our factories left. And then we hear stories, I'm not going to say lies, but stories about how we know we have all these jobs and RTP. And my question is who has those jobs? Are they people from North Carolina? Mm-hmm. Or are they people who are also on visas? Are they guest workers on visas also, but mm-hmm. high-tech visas? So we need
that could be another whole radio show.
Yeah, so we need to scrutinize that and look again at NAFTA and get people involved to say, you know, mm-hmm. we need better conditions for farm workers in North Carolina and all workers in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We need our industries back. We need people to have living wages. So can we stop NAFTA?
And then a Jews for a Just Peace?
I am kind of in Durham. A couple of my friends started a chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace. So I'm not Jewish, I'm Palestinian. And so that's kind of like my entry into the social justice world, was just growing up as a Palestinian and knowing, hey, what they say on TV isn't true about certain groups of people.
Did you grow up in this country?
Yes.
But your parents were Palestinian.
My parents are Palestinian, and I was born in Kuwait, but I grew up in Kentucky and South Carolina.
But you have all your parents' stories
and of what happened
to the Palestinians.
Exactly. So again, I just feel, again, just like thinking about people mm-hmm. and people being displaced and mm-hmm. For what reasons, and why is one group of people an ally and another group of people not allies?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I just feel like it's power, it's economics. And they all connect to social justice and how we can all continue to learn to improve conditions, I think, for people.
Yeah.
So the biggest issue that people were organizing around lately was Gaza.
Yes.
Heartbreaking.
Tragedy.
So one way that's not really related for Jewish Voice for Peace, they're having a meeting on Sunday, by the way, in the afternoon somewhere in Durham. Miriam Thompson probably has information about that people are calling her anyways.
Yeah, remember that number, 919-370-4114.
Miriam is like Nadine. She's a member of many different organizations. And like Nadine, they are all connected with justice.
Yeah. So I have cousins that are still in the Middle East. And I feel like even though I'm from Palestine, I still don't know enough. So I have a blog. It's called My Baba's Mustache. But right now I'm interviewing one of my cousins about what is life like. Like, can you tell us, like, what do you do? Like, what are your hopes and dreams? And what do you think about people saying that Palestine never existed? So, again, that's just another piece of... And I think all of these issues are related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, we're running short on time. And this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour. The wake-up call.